Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Once again, John Malden is here. He's the president of Millennium Wave Investments. John is a New York Times bestselling author and is writer and editor of the highly acclaimed Thought from the Frontline e-letter, which goes out to over 1.5 million readers every week. He's interviewed very often on TV and radio all over the world. John, welcome back to our show.
It's good to be here, Bruce.
Let's talk a little bit about the epicenter of how this all started. There was a time where we thought that making loans to everybody in sight that could buy a property was the wisest thing. Have we found out otherwise?
Well, I mean, I think the answer is clearly yes. In making loans to people who can repay them back is still not a bad investment.
That's correct.
What we began to do in our hubris was decide that we could use models and statistically predict who could pay and who could not. And therefore, with these models, we really didn't need to take as much information. We didn't need to be as careful about how we lent the money because we had these models which told us what they were going to do. And the same is, these were the same models, in theory, that hedge funds and quantitative funds used to predict which stocks would go up and which would go down, and of course which were turned upside down on their heads in August of 2007 and since then. Because these models assume what's known as a Gaussian curve.
Okay.
And it's just your typical bell curve. And what we find in the real world, though, there's no such thing as a bell curve. In the world of finance, there's what we call fat tails, that after you get down to approaching zero, towards the end, they start going back up. You have these, five standard deviation, six standard deviation events, which the, mathematicians say should only happen once every 10,000 years, but they seem to happen about once every 4 years.
Okay.
Because you can't model such things, and it's genuinely, it's hubris, it's arrogance of the most irrational sort to think that you could. Yeah, we trained two generations of MBAs and economists on these theories, and then we unleashed them on investment advisory firms and brokers, and they've created these models which said, look, you can start here, and if you save this much money, your stock market investment is going to grow over time, and you'll be able to retire. And, they wave their pixie dust and their wands because these were smart people. But they were smart people using bad theories.
Now,
in many cases, theories that got Nobel Prizes. But they've clearly been shown to be bankrupt today.
One of the books that you recommend reading is The Black Swan. And
yes.
I think that's what he addresses in that is the arrogance of thinking that you could figure this out so easily.
Yes.
He makes an interesting comment, I think this is my two favorite words out of the book, is he said, looking back, a black swan event is retrospectively obvious. And I guess looking back, we could have seen that loaning money to people that really didn't have to prove very much would have to have a bad ending.
Well, such things always end in tears. But I mean, when I first came along and started looking at collateralized debt obligations, and this was sometime in the middle of 2006.
Okay.
And a friend of mine sent me a paper. It was actually, I think it was Gary Schilling, and then some other papers. Some of us started circulating papers and digging into this, and we started looking at collateralized debt obligations and what they really were and how people were taking the worst part of a mortgage-backed security, the bottom 4 or 5%, grouping them all together, creating a brand new security And there, here again, they would create models that the rating agencies would use that said, okay, we're now taking this worst 4 or 5%, and we're now saying that 70% of it is AAA.
Mm-hmm.
And you wanted to look at that, and you go, my God, all you have to do is have a simple recession where home values drop 5 or 10% nationwide after what's clearly going here is a bubble, and all of these things go to zero. And I was writing about this, and others were beginning to write about this in late 2006, and I'm just a country boy from Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I do read and study a lot, okay?
If I
can sit in Dallas, Texas, and other people around the country can start figuring this out, you would think the guys on the inside who are creating these things could have figured it out. But the interesting thing is, not only did they not figure it out, they actually bought some of the very garbage that they were creating and put it into the banks, and that's why you have Merrill and Morgan and Citi with all of this really, really bad paper, because they thought it was going to be good. And why it goes back to, they have these models. We sold our souls, to the efficient market hypothesis and to all sorts of nonsense. Now, as Nassim says, when you look back, in retrospect, it's blindingly obvious.
What is the current mood toward? I mean, you have a very unusual perspective, actually. You talk to people all over the world. So what is the current mood toward the United States and capitalism in general?
Well, it's more skeptical, I think.
Yeah.
And rightly so. A lot of the world saw America, especially the third world, saw America as this, shining city on a hill, but they also saw us as, rather arrogant, saying, you should run your banks like we do. The IMF would go and say, you're in a crisis, your budgets are too high, you need to cut spending and do so forth. Well, the very things that we were telling other people to do, we, of course, are not doing ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So it's understandable that there's a degree of skepticism out there. The epicenter was Southern California and Nevada, Florida for these bonds, but it was distributed. But we sold all this stuff to Europe and Asia.
Absolutely.
And the reality is, and this is going to come out over the next 6 months to a year, European banks are in far worse shape than U.S. banks. They have not even gotten close to writing down the amounts of money that they're going to have to write.
Is that more toward because they've lent to emerging countries or because they invested in mortgage-backed securities?
All of the above and more.
Okay.
It's just a general part of it's just general downturn. But Western European banks took a huge chunk of Eastern European debt, and mortgage loans, business loans, construction loans. Austrian banks lent more than the entire Austrian GDP. The Austrian government couldn't come in and rescue the Austrian banks if they wanted to. They literally they can't print the money because they're in the euro. They couldn't borrow that amount of money. They're not big enough. The German banks are in trouble. The United Kingdom has devalued their way out of it. Their currency is down 25%. At least it may go down more.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, the UK may be in of all of Europe, probably, even though its banking crisis is so bad, because they had their own currency, they could devalue their way out of it. A lot of European banks lent a lot of money to Asia, mm-hmm. and Asian currency countries, which are having their own crisis. So, I mean, plus their own internal problems. I mean, it's a recession. You're just going to have businesses not making as much money or going bankrupt. They have their own commercial real estate issues. The housing crisis in Spain, in Ireland, in England, and in other countries was bigger and worse than it has been in the U.S. Ireland is in outright, flat out deflation of about 4% a year, year over year. I mean, there are some serious problems, and the entire world is underneath this cloud, the developed world.
And so, I mean, do we have anything that compares to this? I'm about 57, and I wasn't fully aware, I don't think, until 1980. But this feels as threatening as anything I've ever seen personally. So.
Oh, absolutely. We haven't gone through anything like this in our lifetime on a worldwide basis. I mean, you'll have a crisis here, a crisis there, but. We're now having a coordinated global recession. World trade is down 10%. Equipment orders in Japan are down 80%. I mean, think about, you go from, you know, being this a large producer of certain types of machines, and all of a sudden your orders are down 80% in a period of like 6 months.
That's
your car orders are down. I mean, Japan's has real problems, and they're doing their best to destroy their currency, and they're having trouble doing it. But they, you know, if their currency keeps rising, it makes their products more expensive, and they need their products to be cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
But then every country wants their products to be cheaper so they can sell to somebody else. It's a very, very difficult time to be a central banker.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the state that I happen to live in, California. We definitely have our foreclosure problems. I talked to a gentleman a couple of days ago, and we have about 240,000 properties currently in some stage of foreclosure. Today, they started a new moratorium. First of all, I guess, what is your thought about moratoriums?
Well, I mean, just puts off the inevitable.
Yeah, it kind of does.
I mean, if you can pay for your house, you can pay for it. If you can go to your lender and say, okay, this is the payment I can make. Can you live with that? If you can't, then take the house.
The biggest problem with California, and this is not, it is kind of unique in that we got crazy overpriced and to where. It's not unusual for the lenders to be have a loan balance $200,000 more than the house is worth, and that's actually on the low side. That's for a house that used to be worth $350,000; it's now worth $150,000, and because of the financing out there, we have lots of people that owe $350,000 in some combination of a first and a second. And there's
I read today when we pitch came out. And basically said that 50% of the people that are still making their mortgage payments, if they bought their home after 2005, they are underwater on their mortgage. But they're still making their payments. But 50% of them are underwater. And yet they're saying that home values are going to go down another 12.5%. This is a very, very difficult environment.
I think that actually says something about the character of the American buyer, because they are making a payment very often where they know they're upside down, and yet they still make it 90% of the time. The problem is, and what you just alluded to, is if prices continue to decline and unemployment continues to go up, you're going to have some forced decisions create a much bigger problem.
Yes, and you're going to see, unemployment's going to rise another probably, at least, maybe 1%.
Mm-hmm.
It's already 12% in Southern California. It's going to be difficult to entice businesses. If you're in Southern California and you're wanting to entice a business, it's going to come in and hire people. If you have a choice of going to Texas or a choice of going to California, and you look at your taxes and you look at what it's going to cost you to run and you look at everything else, you go, I'm going to go to Texas. And that's why Texas has produced more jobs than all the other 49 states combined.
I like our property tax bill better than yours, though.
Your property tax bill is better, but my income tax bill is better.
You bet it is.
The corporate taxes. I mean, it's a daunting environment to try to attract people when you're raising taxes. And that's what Michigan, you know, Ohio, Connecticut, New York, what they're all finding out is that the states that have the highest taxes are the ones that are losing the most jobs. But that's what the market tells you is going to happen. Florida overbuilt their homes by worse than California. But Florida will come back quicker than California because they have a low tax environment and people want to go there to retire. And so eventually there'll be enough people wanting the boomer generation that wants to go there and retire and find out that they can buy homes at 50 cents on the dollar are going to go do that.
You had in one of your news articles talked about Gary Schilling's thoughts on how to solve the housing problem, and it basically was to create demand. And I thought it was pretty creative. So would you share that with us?
I thought it was, too. That's why I wrote about it. Gary says that we let something like 800,000 people a year come into this country as immigrants each year. Okay, so it's not a matter of immigrants or no immigrants. We let them in generally because they're a cousin or a brother or something of somebody who's already here. What we should do for the next 2 years is just say, okay, cousins and brothers can wait. If you've got enough money to buy a home, and you can demonstrate the ability to maintain it for a year and maintain yourself, then you can come here and you can get a green card. And you keep your nose clean for 4 years, we'll make it a permanent green card. And inside of a year, you'd sop up all the extra homes on the market. We'd have a middle class, not people that were coming because they were cousins or whatever, but people who were coming because they had money. So they're going to be coming in and buying businesses and creating businesses and creating jobs. We wouldn't have taken any more people than we would have, you know, beforehand. We'd have just said, we'd specifically like to have people that can buy a home.
Now, when you say buy a home, you're not talking about with financing. You're talking about buy a home.
I'm talking buy a home.
Okay.
You come here, you're writing a check for $150,000, $200,000, whatever it is. I'm going to buy a home.
Okay.
And you know.
And live in it.
You're going to come live here.
Okay, and live in it.
And live in it. You can't, this is not, you don't get the green card if you buy the home and you rent it out.
Okay.
You come here and you live. You know, now you've got to pass some background checks. And, you know, the same thing you have to do normally. But we run through the housing glut, doing what we're already doing, which is allowing 800,000 people a year to come in. We just have let people that, in this case, have money. That helps solve a huge problem on our end. It settles the housing market out. It actually allows it to start rising rather than continuing to fall probably for another year.
So you got forced, sort of like forced household creation.
Yes. By the way, there are countries that do this, that Canada, Australia, other places that are actively looking for immigrants who are educated, who are young, who have something to bring to the table. And those countries and their economies are doing far better than ours. And we're going to find out, ironically, in 10 years, that one of the biggest competitions in the world is going to be for young, educated, literate workers. And United States are going to go from this anti-immigration backlash, which from an economist standpoint is sheer stupidity, because there's only two ways you can make an economy grow. You can increase the number of workers, and you can increase their productivity. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a boomer generation that's trying to retire. So we need to increase the number of workers. We need to be bringing more immigrants in, not less. And we need to be bringing in educated, wealthy, if we can get them, middle-class, entrepreneurial people. Most of us look around and, you know, you go back two or three generations. In my case, you've got to go back five or six. We came in the 1600s. But on some of the sides of it is,
mm-hmm.
but most of us have got, you know, an immigrant or two in our background, and some of us have Irish immigrants, so my great grandparents on one side were, when they came through New York, they were greeted with signs at the bars that said Irish and dogs not welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, now anybody would say, well, that's insulting to the Irish. Well, at one time the Irish were the down, you know, they were the bad guy group.
Yes.
Immigrants are the heart and soul of this country, and it doesn't take but one or two generations and they assimilate. And in this case, we need to take our immigration policy that says we're bringing in 800,000 immigrants a year anyway, and let's just bring them in and have them do something, which is buy houses, just like Canada, like Australia, like a lot of other countries.
Can I suggest one other thing? And I've really not thought about what you had suggested until this morning because I hadn't read it. But I kind of like the idea. But there is another group that's already here that's just having a very difficult time getting finance, actually, and that's investors. There's a lot of properties that are in very rough condition that wouldn't be available for somebody necessarily to want to buy. And I don't know how familiar you are with financing for investors, but it's very difficult to get. No matter what your financial position is, being an investor is a bad word today. So we've taken the Irish's place.
it's just going to have to that's part of the problem. Prices have got to drop to where investors can afford to buy things and fix them up.
They're there. And we could do it.
And
we could do it, but we're not allowed to borrow it.
It's going to take time.
Yeah.
You understand? We blew up 40-50% of the financing vehicles that finance the housing and construction and development. We blew them up. This was the shadow banking system.
Absolutely, they're gone.
Special investment vehicles and the CDOs and all. Those are gone. They're never coming back.
Mm-hmm.
So we've now got to go create brand new structured security vehicles that investors will be confident that they'll actually get their money back. The first CDO was created in 1990, and it didn't blow up till really 2007. So, I mean, it took some time to build it up,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to take time to create a new system.
Okay.
It's clearly not happening overnight, but we'll get there. I mean, I'm not doom and gloom in the sense. I mean, 10 years from now, we'll all be happier that we're living in 2019 than we were in 2009.
I agree.
Okay.
John,
we're going to like the medicine better, the technology better. We'll all be wealthier. We'll be smarter. And hopefully we'll be better looking.
John Malden, thank you so much for joining us. Once again, your website, johnmalden.com?
johnmalden.com, MALDIN. And just click on Thoughts from the Frontline. That's my newsletter, and it'll pop up, and you'll be able to put your email address in. And then you'll become one of my 1.5 million closest friends. The letter's free.
All right.
And
John,
I write each week about something that I think is interesting.
Jonathan, again, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your time.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.